Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 264, entitled Darth Nader, Ralph Nader's Politics of Hypocrisy. This is being recorded on December 10th of the year 2000. I had nothing at all to say about Ralph Nader during the course of the campaign. That's something that I regret in one sense. On the other hand, I did not know how many people were taking Ralph Nader seriously. I knew that he was getting promoted by the mainstream media, and in all likelihood, the assets, the media assets, that the Bush faction of the intelligence community has. Quite simply, anti-corporate leftists do not get kind treatment from the mainstream media, and Ralph Nader not only had a lot of press, but very good press, very uncritical press from the mainstream media, and they do not do that. They don't do uncritical press about doctrinaire leftists. I also, frankly, was unaware of the extent to which an awful lot of people just do not know what the hell is really going on in this country. They don't even really understand our system of government, as far as I can tell. There's an expression that was coined by a German social critic. I've forgotten his name offhand, but he noted, appropriately enough, history teaches us that we learn nothing from history. In the wake of the campaign just concluded, in the process of concluding, there has been a lot of discussion of past elections that were very close, and among the elections that were discussed were the 1960 and 68 elections, in which Richard Nixon was defeated narrowly by John F. Kennedy, an election result that was turned around rather dramatically on November 22, 1963, while Nixon was in Dallas. And in 1968, Nixon won a very, very close presidential election, in part because a fair percentage of the Democrats' traditional constituency had been alienated from Hubert Humphrey on the issue of the Vietnam War. I have one of my more distinct college political memories was of people, quote, cleaning for Gene, unquote, cutting their long hair and shaving and wearing nice clothes so they look good for the cameras when they went to Eugene McCarthy for president rallies. And ultimately, the alienation of a considerable percentage of voters who might have gone Democratic over the issue of the Vietnam War wound up giving Richard Nixon the presidency. It later emerged that Eugene McCarthy, who had appropriated the mantle of the anti-war candidate, emerged in a book called The Who's Who in the CIA that, according to the author of that book, Julius Motter, Eugene McCarthy, a United States senator from Minnesota, was a career employee of the Central Intelligence Agency. It also later developed in the book Spooks by Jim Hogan that the person who was bankrolling Eugene McCarthy's presidential candidacy in 1968 was a guy named Stuart Mott, who was an industrialist whose family marketed a line of apple products, such as Mott's applesauce, Mott's apple juice, etc. And at the same time that he was bankrolling Eugene McCarthy's 1968 candidacy, Mott was bankrolling a company called Environmental Industries. And that sounds very hip and very groovy and very progressive. Environmental Industries, I don't know what it's called, Incorporated or Limited, but it was a parent company that was manufacturing the Ingram MAC-10 and MAC-11 machine pistols, silenced automatic weapons that were developed primarily by Mitchell Werbel, nicknamed the Wizard of Whispering Death and a longtime veteran of covert operations. And in 1980, I would point out that Eugene McCarthy endorsed Ronald Reagan for president, thereby lending substance to the allegations made in the Julius Motter book that, in fact, Eugene McCarthy had been, according to Motter anyway, allegedly working for the CIA at the time. As you listen to what I'm about to say, I don't want to be misunderstood as stating that Ralph Nader is in the employ of the CIA, although it's a possibility I hold open. I've been convinced, as someone that's been reading many, many newspapers for a long time, that the Nader candidacy was being promoted in the media by the Bush faction of the intelligence community, and indeed, I think, what many sager heads warned ultimately became quite manifest, namely that Nader was basically a stalking horse for George W. Bush. In fact, it is now a matter of public record that the Bush campaign bought Nader ads in Wisconsin and Oregon, I believe it was. Anyway, two states. Oregon was one of them. I believe the other was Wisconsin. I would also point out that the fact of the matter is, as we're in the first of the articles that I'm about to read, the fact of the matter is that America is not a parliamentary democracy. You don't get seats for winning a certain percentage of the vote. You don't become part of a coalition government. Our political system was developed to have two parties simply because the founding fathers were mostly afraid, or the framers of the Constitution, were mostly afraid of another George III, and they wanted to make damn sure that the wheels of government would grind relatively slowly in this country so that no one element could gain too much power. In light of what has taken place, I think those people who warned, as I mentioned privately to people, as I said, I never said anything on the air about Nader, but I simply warned that a vote for Nader was a vote for Bush, and I don't think one can intelligently argue with that. Nader got some 90,000-some-odd votes in Florida, and he did not get his 5% nationwide. And by way of achieving some perspective, bear in mind that H. Ross Perot got just under 20% of the popular vote in 1992, and 8 years later, his populist party is a joke. It is no longer a serious force in American politics. I would also point out that Al Gore stated during the campaign that if he was elected president, he would sign I believe it's the McCain-Feingold bill, campaign finance reform that would have gotten the Green Party more money than they would have gotten had Ralph Nader got 5%. However, that, as they say, is history, and I want to note the following. Research credit on the first three articles in this broadcast go to members of the listening audience. The first article comes from consortiumnews.com. The consortium is an alternative media journalistic consortium headed up by Robert Perry, last name P-A-R-R-Y. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from the consortium's website. This was headlined, German Green Warns Against Nader Threat, or titled by Consortium, German Green Warns Against Nader Threat. And this is a warning about Ralph Nader coming from one of the founding members of the Green Party in Germany, and it reads as follows. And again, research credit to a listener. A founding member of the Green Party in southern Germany calls Ralph Nader's U.S. Green Party campaign, quote, immature, unquote, and a, quote, alarming, unquote, threat that could put into power a Republican who is a, quote, certified polluter, unquote, opposed to the ideals of Greens on both sides of the Atlantic. In a statement about Nader's impact on Campaign 2000, Martin Killian, K-I-L-I-A-N, who helped found the German Green Party in Konstanz in 1979, said the winner-take-all electoral system in the United States differs dramatically from the German political system. Under that system, the Greens could gain seats in Parliament by winning 5% of the vote or more. Back in the 1970s, we, too, had felt that we always voted for a lesser evil, unquote, the Social Democrats in our case, Killian said. Again quoting, yet we were lucky. Germany has a parliamentary government and a proportional election system. No vote for us was lost as long as we got up to 5%, unquote. Killian, now a journalist living in Charlottesville, Virginia, noted that the Greens in Germany used their seats in the parliament to join the coalition government of Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder, a Social Democrat. Joschka Fischer, a Green, is Germany's current foreign minister. The American situation, alas, is very different, Killian said, again quoting, America is not a parliamentary democracy, and proportional representation doesn't exist, the winner takes all. Under this scenario, Ralph Nader, the Green presidential candidate, could throw the American presidential election to the Republicans, a highly alarming prospect. Quote, the next American president would be a certified polluter, and a man who couldn't be further from any ideals the Greens here and on the other side of the Atlantic espouse. Quote, as somebody who has voted Green since 1979 in Germany, I don't understand the reasoning behind Nader's position. The bottom line of all progressive politics is the improvement of people's lives and the protection of the environment. George W. Bush, on both accounts, would be a step back. Just look at his tax cut or a Bush energy policy. Quote, the position of the American Greens is highly questionable and outright immature, if you ask me, unquote. And I think Martin Killian is being very gracious in his assessment of the Nader candidacy. That, again, from the website www.consortiumnews.com. It was posted on November 1st of the year 2000. When Ralph Nader disclosed his financial statement in June of the year 2000, it was revealed that the man was a multimillionaire and had millions of dollars in stock holdings. That was something I found rather interesting. Generally speaking, one does not become a millionaire on the left. If you're persistent and skilled, you may be able to earn a living, but there just aren't a whole lot of millions of dollars to be had working on the left. So that was a fact that raised more questions than it answered. I did note, however, that it might provide a bit of method to Nader's madness in that he stands to become a beneficiary of the Bush tax cut plan, if in fact that goes through. What I did not know at the time, and frankly does not surprise me a great deal, is that a detailed examination of Ralph Nader's investments reveals Ralph Nader to be a consummate hypocrite. I don't want to be misunderstood in the following context as condemning people for making investments. Life is hard, and we all try to get the best we can out of our money. I would note, however, that there are socially conscious ways of investing one's money. That is not to condemn those who do not. Frankly, when one is investing money, one tries to get as much money out of it as possible if one is generally following the accepted procedure. There are ways of investing money in a socially constructive fashion. However, an awful lot of people are just not aware of the socially conscious investment funds. One would suppose that Ralph Nader was one of those, but that supposition would be wrong. And that's giving Nader a lot of credit. That's assuming that he does not know about those. Again, I don't want to be misunderstood as condemning people for making money. However, I do think that, as the expression has it, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. By way of kicking off the article that I'm about to read, I'm going to quote Winona LaDuke, who was Ralph Nader's vice presidential candidate, also, by the way, a very good friend of Gloria Steinem. When Gloria Steinem was recently married, it was on Winona LaDuke's, at Winona LaDuke's home. The following is from the VoteNader.org website, V-O-T-E-N-A-D-E-R, and this is quoted in an article by Jeff McMahon that I'm about to read into the record in detail. Ralph Nader, Winona LaDuke, and others, other Naderoids, have condemned Al Gore because his mother, now not Al Gore, but his mother's trust, has a big block of Occidental Petroleum stock that she inherited from her husband, who was a senator from Tennessee. This has led, the fact that Gore's mother had a block of Occidental Petroleum stock has led some to condemn Al Gore. Well, I think that the yardstick that Winona LaDuke and other Naderoids used to condemn Al Gore should and must be held up to measure Ralph Nader. Quote, as I listen to the vice president espouse his views on campaign finance reform, I look at his investment portfolio and have to ask how that might influence public policy. Gore owns substantial stock in Occidental Oil Company, which is working to exploit oil reserves under Ua land in Colombia. That, again, a quote from Winona LaDuke, Ralph Nader's vice presidential candidate. And since Ms. LaDuke and Ralph Nader and others have condemned Al Gore because of his mother's trust stock in Occidental Oil, I do think that assessing Ralph Nader by the yardstick by which he has measured others is not only fair but necessary. The following article was also researched for us by a member of the listening audience. This is an article entitled How Nader Profits While He Preaches. It's by Jeff McMahon, capital M-C, capital M-A-H-O-N. This was posted on October 27th of the year 2000, and the URL is www.bushwatch.net. That's www.bushwatch.net/nader.htm. And again, this was posted on October 27th of the year 2000. Jeff McMahon writes as follows in the article How Nader Profits While He Preaches. Did you know that Ralph Nader has a financial interest in Dick Cheney's success and has financial ties to Enron, one of George W. Bush's major campaign contributors? While Nader attacks corporations such as Halliburton, Raytheon, Boeing, Ford, Philip Morris, Pfizer, McDonald's, and Occidental as being harmful to mankind, he makes investment profits off of all of these and more. What's the point, you ask? If corporate contributions corrupt candidates, can't corporate investments corrupt candidates? And if Mr. Nader questions Mr. Gore's populist rhetoric and his mother's oil holdings, shouldn't he also question his own? As you know, Greens and other activists have been protesting Al Gore because his mother's trust owns stock in Occidental Petroleum, which has been striving to drill for oil on the sacred lands of the indigenous Ua people in Colombia. In the U.S., the protests have had two main targets, Mr. Gore and Fidelity Investments, one of the largest holders of Occidental stock. Fidelity holds far more shares, by the way, than Pauline Gore's trust. Fidelity controls about $500 million worth of Occidental stock, according to the Rainforest Action Network, which accuses Fidelity of, quote, investing in genocide, unquote. Protesters have urged Fidelity investors to divest from Fidelity unless Fidelity pressures Occidental to cancel its Columbia project. Apparently, Ralph Nader didn't hear them. In the financial disclosure form he filed on June 14th, Ralph Nader reported that he owns between $100,000 and $250,000 worth of shares of the Fidelity Magellan Fund. As an owner of the fund, Nader owns a portion of the stocks that make up the fund, including its 4,321,400 shares of Occidental Petroleum. Mr. Nader has no control over the investment choices Fidelity makes in his fund, but he receives reports of fund holdings, and he has his choice of funds. Unlike Mr. Gore, Mr. Nader has a personal stake in Occidental, and he has not issued any press release announcing his divestment or pressuring Occidental to halt its project. But wait, there's more. Fidelity Magellan also owns stock in Dick Cheney's Halliburton Company, which has been linked in a published report to the deaths of environmental activists and indigenous people in the Niger Delta. So please note that, again, Ralph Nader holds anywhere up to $250,000 worth of Fidelity Magellan Fund, and Fidelity Magellan Fund owns stock in Dick Cheney's Halliburton Oil Company. Continuing, and I'm sure you will recognize the names below, just a small sampling of the companies in which Ralph Nader has a personal stake. And then Jeff McMahon lists the following corporations, and again, these are corporations in which Fidelity Magellan owns stock. And the list reads as follows. Greens and Naderoids, take note. Exxon Corporation, what is not mentioned in the Jeff McMahon article, that one of George W. Bush's top advisors is a guy named Michael Boskin, who is a director of Exxon. Bear that in mind. Let's continue with the list. Exxon, Royal Dutch Petroleum, BP Amoco, Chevron, Bush advisor Condoleezza Rice is a director of Chevron. That, by the way, is Jeff McMahon's text here. I would note that a director of Exxon is Michael Boskin. Continuing with a list of companies in which Fidelity Magellan owns stock, and bear in mind that Ralph Nader has somewhere up to $250,000 in Fidelity Magellan among his investments. Shell, Sunoco, Texaco, the Coastal Corporation, Gulf of Mexico Drilling and Coal Mining, Total Fina, specialist in international oil exploitation, Raytheon, Missile Guidance Systems, General Dynamics, Warships, Kimberly-Clark, Destroyer of Forests, Louisiana Pacific, Destroyer of Forests, Polluter of Bays, Ford Motor Company, chastised by Nader just last week, General Motors, ditto, Biogen, Biopharmaceuticals, Genentech, Biopharmaceuticals, Monsanto, pesticides including Roundup and bioengineering, including corn that kills butterflies. Then the following are all pharmaceutical companies. Bristol-Myers, Squibb, Merck, Pfizer, Warner-Lambert, Caterpillar, maker of bulldozers, McDonald's, a villain of globalization, Clorox, maker of ozone layer holes, Gillette, former torturer of bunnies, Procter & Gamble, and Philip Morris. By the way, one of the companies that I did not note in the initial listing here, Kimberly-Clark, Destroyer of Forests, and Louisiana Pacific, Destroyer of Forests, Polluter of Bays. Louisiana Pacific has had a lot of publicity here in California. That is one of the main companies involved with the cutting or attempted cutting of old-growth redwoods, and they're among Ralph Nader's corporate investments. Continuing. Returning to the list and overlapping with the enumeration that I engaged in, McDonald's, a villain of globalization, also a vision, perhaps, of globalization, Clorox, maker of ozone layer holes, Gillette, former torturer of bunnies, Procter & Gamble, and Philip Morris. And the next time there's an anti-consumerism day, be aware that Mr. Nader owns stock in The Gap, The Limited, and these big-box purveyors of sprawl, Walmart, Target, Home Depot, Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, and Staples. Also a couple of energy companies, Montana Power Company, moving from oil, gas, and coal to fiber optics, and Enron, the largest natural gas company. Enron, by the way, a major corporate backer of George W. Bush's candidacy. And by the way, as I speak on December 10th of the year 2000, everybody who listens to this program, when you hear it, take a look at what's happened to the price of natural gas. Continuing, Fidelity Magellan controls stock in hundreds more corporations. These just popped out at me. I don't think it's a sin for a man to have investments, although there is a case for hypocrisy here, but I think those activists chaining themselves to desks at the Gore campaign might want to also visit the Nader office. In 1996, Nader refused to release a financial disclosure statement or his tax return, saying it was, quote, full of zeros, unquote. This year, he filed a financial disclosure, perhaps because his contribution level triggered a requirement. Personally, I can't believe he's not in a blind trust or one of the socially conscious funds that are available, but apparently no one scrutinizes Nader. Everyone assumes he is above reproach. He still refuses to release his personal income tax return. And then there are a number of relevant quotes that Jeff McMahon provides in this article. The first is a 1996 NPR interview. Scott Simon, Mr. Nader, would you, as major party presidential candidates do, release copies of your tax return and financial disclosure statement? Ralph Nader, no, because I want to practice what I've preached for 30 years. I have advocated the privacy of medical records, income tax records, because I think it's an essential defense to corporate power and arbitrary government power. Scott Simon, I'm just wondering if American voters aren't entitled to know something about what your sources of financial support have been over the years in work which you're clearly involved, even for the benefit of the American people, just so they can, you know, make a rational judgment. Ralph Nader, well, I've said it to anybody who asks. It's not relevant because it's full of zeros. Parenthetically, I would ask, it's not a bad thing to have in your financial statement is lots of zeros. I wouldn't mind having about six following any basic integer other than zero in mind. Continuing, beginning again with Nader's statement here. Ralph Nader, well, I've said it to anybody who asks. It's not relevant because it's full of zeros. In other words, I don't take any funds from any of these nonprofit groups. I don't take any funds from the potential campaign contributors, and it's hard to, you know, demonstrate a negative. Well, he's taking plenty of money from profit groups or taking profits along with them. That, by the way, from the website www.npr.org/hotnews. Another quote. This from the Washington Post of June 18th of the year 2000. Quote, Nader said the stocks he chose were the, quote, most neutral-type companies, unquote. And quoting Nader directly, number one, they're not monopolists. And number two, they don't produce landmine, napalm, and weapons, he said. And then Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 777,080 shares of Raytheon, missile manufacturer, plus five other aerospace and defense corporations. Nader, quote, I'm quite aware of how the arms race is driven by corporate demands for contracts, whether it's General Dynamics or Lockheed Martin. They drive it through Congress. They drive it by hiring Pentagon officials in the Washington military-industrial complex, as Eisenhower phrased it, unquote. That from the Progressive magazine, April of 2000. Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 2,041,800 shares of General Dynamics. And quoting now from the Washington Post of Saturday, June 17th of the year 2000, quote, The corporations are planning our futures. They are making sure our children grow up corporate. The kids are over-medicated, militarized, cosmetized, and corporatized. They are raised by KinderCare, fed by McDonald's, and educated by Channel One. Ralph Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 15,694,800 shares of McDonald's. The next quote is from Nader's testimony before the House Budget Committee on June 30th, 1999. Bristol-Myers Squibb markets Taxol at a wholesale price that is nearly 20 times its manufacturing cost. A single injection of Taxol can cost patients considerably more than $2,000, and treatment requires multiple injections. And Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, $15 million. 266,900 shares of Bristol-Myers Squibb. And the next quote is from the program Burden of Proof on CNN, and it's a direct quote from Nader. Quote, Both parties are terrible on antitrust. Look, we have Boeing now, one aircraft company manufacturer after the McDonnell Douglas merger. Ralph Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 2,908,600 shares of Boeing. Quote, equally damaging, Nader said, was the Justice Department's failure to effectively challenge such recent mergers as British Petroleum with Amoco and Exxon with Mobil. Quote, the combining of these giant oil companies concentrates the oil industry's economic power in fewer hands and gives those merged companies greater opportunity to manipulate prices, unquote, Nader said, again quoting, oil company profits are up on average of 300% in the first quarter of 2000 compared to the first quarter of 1999. And that is from a Nader 2000 press release on June 28th of the year 2000. Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 24,753,870 shares of BP Amoco, 28,751,268 shares of Exxon Mobil. And then the next quote is from Salon Magazine, September 26th of the year 2000, quote, the bearded Eddie Vedder, with chin-length hair framing his still boyish face, launched into a tender version of Soon Forget from Pearl Jam's latest album, Binaural. He called out facetiously to find out whether Microsoft co-founder and area billionaire Paul Allen were in the audience, and then dedicated this song about the isolation and loneliness that accompany excessive wealth to Allen and Bill Gates. After receiving a standing ovation, Vedder brought Nader to the stage, introducing him as, quote, someone who represents us and not the corporate interests, unquote. Ralph Nader's Fidelity Magellan Fund, 41,845,400 shares of Microsoft. Then Jeff McMahon goes on to comment, what's the point, you ask? If corporate contributions corrupt candidates, can't corporate investments corrupt candidates? And if Mr. Nader questions Mr. Gore's populist rhetoric, shouldn't he also question his own? And again, Nader's vice presidential candidate, Winona LaDuke, questioned Gore as follows. And again, this is because his mother's trust owns stock in, holds a block of Occidental Petroleum. Quote, as I listen to the vice president espouse his views on campaign finance reform, I look at his investment portfolio and have to ask how that might influence public policy. Gore owns substantial stock in Occidental Oil Company, which is working to exploit oil reserves under Ua Land in Colombia. And, again, I think that same yardstick, that wielded by Winona LaDuke, Nader's vice presidential candidate, needs to be applied to Ralph Nader. And bear in mind that Nader's, not that Fidelity Magellan is Nader's exclusive fund, but he owns somewhere up to $250,000 in Fidelity Magellan, and that's one of his many investments. And among the many their investments, Halliburton Oil and its subsidiary, Brown & Root. That's Dick Cheney's company. This, again, How Nader Profits While He Preaches by Jeff McMahon from www.bushwatch.net, B-U-S-H-W-A-T-C-H. The various tapes that I've produced over the years are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They're located at P.O. Box 1179. That's Post Office Box 1179. That's in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address for Spitfire is mail at spitfirelist.com. That's M-A-I-L at spitfirelist.com. And you can visit the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. It's equipped with real audio. And WFMU in New Jersey is now beginning to archive the For the Record segments on real audio. Those are some of the old segments. And I'll have the URL for you next week on that one. That concludes Side A of For the Record program number 264, Darth Nader, Ralph Nader's Politics of Hypocrisy. This is being recorded on June 10th of the year 2000. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.